Now you're just taunting me.
Linoleum knife.
The ongoing struggle of when Dave hits the stop
the
button.
The podcast of the cinema where you never know when the theme song, love theme from Linoleum Knife,
right,
is going to start or stop. Or if I'm going to bang the microphone against the table.
Yes, well, we pretty much know that's going to happen.
Things are going to go completely awry. I let it play out this time, but I did enjoy hovering my finger over the button.
To make me squirm.
To make you give me the side eye.
That's also kind of a relationship in a nutshell.
Also, Ellen was grooving to Love Theme from Linoleum.
And well, she should.
And
composed by our dear friend Blue.
I wanted that to keep going, you know, just because.
I like it.
Yeah.
When was it recorded?
Recently.
Oh,
it sounds vintage.
Yeah,
but
it sounds like a cool jazz, right?
Like what? Sure.
You know,
it's like hip easy listening, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Lean in, darling.
Sorry. What they were listening to in one of the movies that we'll be talking about today, and in the car.
So do you have are her levels okay?
Are my levels okay?
Had to turn all the way down for the schmoes because they yell.
Yeah, they were yellers.
They were yelling into the microphone.
I'm turning you back up now.
Yeah. Can you hear me? Am I okay?
Do we want
am
to move
I,
the microphone closer?
Maybe a little
am I,
bit.
Am
yeah.
I too plosive? How are my P's and F's and
okay.
T's?
Oh, those are gonna pop because we don't have fancy, sophisticated equipment.
Yeah, we don't have like old pantyhose.
And our listeners are used
in an Italian accent.
The
so
listeners are used to everything going wrong audio wise. Anyway,
right?
So.
It's part of the charm. That's what we keep telling
it
our
is.
Folks. My name's Alonzo Duraldi. I'm the film critic for The Wrap and What the Flick. With me, as always, is Dave White from Movies.com. And joining us this week is our dear friend Ellen Fox.
Hi. Thank you.
You will, of course, recall that she was the co-host of the Rotten Tomatoes show on Current.
Yes.
This is Rotten Tomatoes month.
For the run of that show,
on
yes.
On Linoleum Knife.
Yeah.
Because last week we had the schmoes complaining about the Rotten Tomatoes show. And by extension, you. And
some girl, Brad Ehrlich.
And then. And now we have you.
Welcome, what's her face?
Well, that's okay. I'm over it because obviously I'm here to tout my new project.
That's right, your new venture. Do we have a clip? No. Yes, Ellen is back on Basic Cable this week.
Yes.
She is the
beginning
host.
Beginning on Tuesday.
Right. She is the host of the new sci-fi competition show, Wizard Wars.
Yes.
Explain. What is it?
Wizard Wars is I don't want to even call reality. It's a competition between young, hip magicians, not unlike Chopped or Iron Chef, where they're given certain random objects. Could be a can of Spam, could be puppies, could be, you know, who knows. And they have to create a magic trick.
Wow.
Together.
Do they have to put the puppy into the can
into
of
the
Spam?
Into the can of Spam, yes.
Much easier, vice versa.
I'll watch that show.
Yes. I mean, there's definitely some teleportation, some levitation, prestidigitation, all the tations. And then if one team beats the other team, they go on to face the house team of two wizards who are professional magicians with various backgrounds. And it's judged by four other magicians, magic people. Penn and Teller, that comprises two of the four.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Latimer, who's a world champion of magic and has a show down in San Diego right now. And Kristen Gerhardt, who is sexy and a magic critic.
They have magic critics?
They do, and she's...
I mean, that makes perfect sense. It is in the realm of the show business.
Yeah, magic critics, because there's a whole world of magic tricks for sale, and so you need somebody to review them and to tell you how they are. So if you go to these different magic websites,
it's like America's Test Kitchen, basically.
Yes, yes, yes. And I've definitely been introduced to this whole world of off the rack magic. But that's what's great about the show is that it's not magic you can buy in the store. It's magic that's created upstairs in our magic workshop.
So is it kind of like Project Runway or RuPaul's Drag Race, where you see them all off in their corner trying to figure out, like, okay, if I put a black drape over this box, and then the buzzsaw goes here, and
yes, yes, like where can we hide the dove?
Do they say horrible things about each other? In like confession cam?
No, there's no confession cam. As much,
because that's always my favorite thing.
Right.
All the shows.
I'm actually surprised that, considering the fact that I think magicians are egomaniacs because they need to be the smartest person in the room, and most of them work solo, considering the fact that they, they're paired up with each other, I was surprised at how few, wand marks were left on each other.
Now, here's my big question. Did any of them come here to make friends?
No, I think they came to try to win half of $10,000. Oh, right! I forgot to tell you the big the payoff is that they win if they beat the Wizards, they win $10,000,
which and they split the bragging rights
and the bragging rights and yeah and the yeah.
And who are they splitting it with? You?
The other person, because it's a duo.
Oh, right, gotcha.
So there is there is money at stake. Definitely tune in. And Wizard Wars, the war that Alan Turing should have lived to fight.
Right on, sister. I saw the trailer for the Alan Turing, the Benedict Cumberbatch Alan Turing movie that's coming out this year.
When's that coming out? What's it called?
Before the end of the year. You would ask me that. I don't remember. But we will be talking about it on this program when it surfaces. It's probably, I think, premiering in Toronto, so I may be seeing... I'm not going to Toronto, but if they have, like, screenings here, maybe I'll get to see it soon. We'll see.
It's called The Electronic Gay.
Oh.
What's it called?
Somebody had complained that the trailer wasn't gay enough, but it's in there. You got, like, Keira Knightley sort of mooning over him and him telling the hot chauffeur from Downton Abbey, I don't love her in that way. And chauffeur guy telling him, well, you can't tell anyone because it's against the law.
Oh, the chauffeur from Downton Abbey's in this?
Yeah.
The one that Lady Sybil had the baby with?
Uh-huh.
Whatever his name is.
Yeah.
I always forget his name.
He's being all science-y now.
Interesting.
Right on.
Yeah.
It's interesting. He kind of, I'm in showbiz, so this matters. He gained a couple, I felt, after Matthew left.
Yeah.
Matthew had... seesawed in weight, and now I feel like in the last season, Irish Chauffeur took over whatever.
Is he getting plumpy?
I feel, yeah.
I don't. He took off his shirt, I remember, in one episode.
Oh, yeah, in the Christmas special.
All right.
Yeah, well, I bet they have really good craft services, including plastic bottles of water, apparently.
They have the best, scones.
The Imitation Game is the name of the
movie. Imitation Game.
I think they call them scones over there.
They call them scones.
Scones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Don't want to start any controversy.
In an advertisement. Well, then what do they call a sconce? Like a lighting fixture.
Maybe they don't call those anything. Maybe those have a whole different word name over
probably.
There.
Probably. Like wainscoting.
This conversation is ridiculous.
Taking a turn, yes.
We should be talking of matters of the cinema.
Well, yes. I'll tell you, this was a tough week for the
cinema.
But
first, we must talk about all the death.
Yes.
Everyone is dead now.
While we taped early last week, because the only time we could make it work with the schmoes was to do it on a Friday afternoon, literally while we were taping the show, and so it was too late for us to talk about then,
right.
News came out that Menachem Golan passed away. If you are a
listener
slash supporter of the program and you purchased our Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episode about the Apple, you know very well who Mr. Golan is.
I'd like to take this opportunity to try to get $1.99 out of people on the occasion of this man's death.
Yeah, because we're that. We'll go there. He and his cousin, not in-law, brother-in-law, as Dave tried to insist during the Apple thing and was wrong. His cousin, you were wrong. His cousin, Yoram Globus, were the guys who started the Canon Film Group, or at least bought
it from
somebody else.
Take it up with the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. library.
Fine. I will do that. I'll talk to Matt. Anyway, so they were the guys behind Canon Film Group who were, they sort of took the baton from Corman, I want to say, in terms of like schlocky, low-budget exploitation film that really found an audience.
Right.
They started off in Israel with the Lemon Popsicle series, which they then retooled in the U.S. as The Last American Virgin, which is the most depressing teen sex comedy ever made.
Therefore the best.
They did all those Chuck Norris movies like Invasion USA, and they did, you know...
Schizoid.
If it had Ninja or Commando in the title, probably them.
Mm-hmm.
Delta Force, The Apple, of course, which is beautifully bonkers, and you've got to see it.
Hot t-shirts.
Which Golan directed. He also directed Over the Top with Sly Stallone competing in the arm wrestling competition for the love of his son.
Is Delta Force one of the hijacking movies where the stewardess is like, but I can't wake out the Jewish
That's the
passport.
One, yeah. Hannah Shigula is the stewardess.
I'm a German, don't you see?
You know, and I'm sure she's thinking, how would Fassbinder do it? Anyway, Golan was a real champion of cinematic craziness, and it's worth noting actually that as even though Canon is best known as being the kind of cheapy exploitative studio, they really also had an eye toward wanting to be a prestige Oscar-winning kind of art film studio. They did snag a couple of Oscar nominations for Andrei Konchalovsky's Runaway Train. I think John Voight and Eric Roberts, I think, were both nominated for that film. And it was based on a Kurosawa screenplay that he'd never shot. They produced Godard's King Lear. They produced John Cassavetes' Love Streams, which I think Criterion is about to or just has put out. I'm blanking now. But Shy People, another Konchalovsky movie that I love with Jill Clayburgh and Barbara Hershey. They covered the waterfront, these guys, and they made the annual Cannes Film Festival preview issue of Variety really fun reading, because they would take out these like 25-30 page color supplement with ad after ad of movie that was probably never going to exist, but they were just sort of throwing their lines in the water. It seemed like, does anybody want to see Whoopi Goldberg and Walter Matthau in a remake of Born Yesterday? No? Okay, well then we won't make it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so, you know, he was a colorful guy, and there are two documentaries coming out about Golan Globus. One that premiered at Cannes this year called The Go-Go Boys, and then there was another one that... I'm forgetting the guy's name now. Anyway, the I'm forgetting the title of the film, but the guy who made Not Quite Hollywood did the unauthorized Canon documentary, which I'm very excited about. And lest we forget, they did give us Break Into Electric Boogaloo.
Oh.
So,
yes.
You know, they shall never be forgotten. But
also,
we will say Kaddish.
Also hot t-shirts, which is my...
Also hot t-shirts. And New Year's Evil.
That is my DVD pick of the week, even though it is not on DVD.
Oh,
What is that about?
It is, however, in its entirety on YouTube.
Oh, well, okay then.
Hot T-Shirts is about breasts.
Oh, good. Yeah. I was right.
Hot T-Shirts is about breasts. It's about dancing in a hot T-shirt. It's about dancing in a hot, wet T-shirt. It's about taking off your hot, wet T-shirt and dancing.
What year was this made?
1980. Yeah.
Okay.
Same year as The Apple.
So there's a lot of... It's a film about breasts.
Is anybody... potentially famous in it? Or?
There's a Canadian, I believe, actor who's in it, big guy, and I'm forgetting his name.
But nobody with the breasts became famous.
No one with breasts in this film became famous, but it's such a good film.
No, I love about, good.
We'll post the link on our Facebook page.
Yes. But it's all, you know, when things go out of the public availability and they wind up on YouTube...
We have no problem sending you there.
It's a great moment for everyone.
That's what technology
for cinema.
Absolutely. So then, a few days later, came the shocking news that Robin Williams took his own life. It's been a fascinating conversation in so many ways, in terms of people really talking about depression, talking about suicidal thoughts, talking about, you know, how this is just there's still this crazy stigma that we don't talk about mental illness the way we should, and we don't address it as, you know, that it's a disease. It is a disease like cancer or anything else. And it's been interesting to also kind of look at his legacy as a film and television performer, because he's been active so long. I mean, Mork and Mindy came on in 1978.
Right.
So, you know, there's more than 35 years of work. And as with anyone who's been that active for that long, a very mixed bag.
Of course. I mean, yeah, they're not all, only a mediocre artist is always at his best.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, there are, and even there's even stuff that you can't even necessarily blame on him, you know, that for why it's not good. But, you know, his stuff really ran the gamut. What I found really fascinating though is how old people are talking about him, like how what they think about.
Yes.
Like there's so many people that younger than us on the internet who are now pundits talking about this stuff who grew up on Hook.
Yeah. That's
you know, yeah, a movie I saw once in 1991 right. and have never thought about again.
Because it's not a good movie.
No.
Well, right. Is it better or worse than Popeye, though?
You know, I've still never seen Popeye.
Oh.
I need to, because I love all
of Popeye.
It has its partisans.
Because it's Bibbs weird. Is a big Popeye it's fan. It's really, really weird, and I'm a huge fan. Okay. Of Popeye.
I mean, one of the reasons I want to see it is I think...
Not in the way that I'm a huge fan of hot t-shirts.
Right. No,
in a whole different way.
I am what I am. The I am what I am song is ringing through my head, as is that floating naked baby in the beginning of The World According to Garp, which is as far as I ever made it with that movie.
Oh, God, see, I just watched it again this
and
week.
Garp, I think, love is The World According to my Garp. Favorite. Garp is my favorite film that he's in.
Yeah, me too. And even though it's like it's his second movie. But yeah, no, I think he was amazing
in
that.
Moscow on the Hudson.
That one I liked.
And that was, I like, it's the early but always prevalent shiny-eyed, you know, sentimental Russian soul Williams.
Sure. Well, I talked about in the thing that I wrote for The Wrap about how, like Chaplin and Jerry Lewis before him, he had kind of a soft spot for bathos. You know, he would go sentimental at the drop of a hat. But then at the same time, you look at something like 1 Hour Photo or Insomnia, where it's just like, it is shut down, and those are crisp. Like, there's not an ounce of goo in those performances. And then you look at, you know, Jack and Toys or something. It's like, but whatever. You know, it's a mixed bag. But I think on the whole, we look back at this guy who I think, I don't know that we'll see anybody else in this generation who could go that antic and that somber, you know, over the course of a career.
Well, I don't think anyone has ever gone as antic as he did.
Probably not.
Maybe
yeah,
Jim Carrey has attempted
sure
to do that,
but no, couldn't
it's in
do
a different
the,
way.
But couldn't do the gravitas though. Like
no,
you know, there was a time when
Eternal
Jim was
Sunshine.
Really trying to get those
Eternal
trying
Sunshine,
to get those
yeah.
awards.
Right.
But,
yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, I think look, Carrey. I think he's you know. Do you say I love you, Philip Morris?
No.
Yeah, check it out. It's great.
I'm
true.
I'm
I love you, Philip Morris. Is amazing.
I'm kind of turned off by. I was never a huge Jim Carrey fan.
This one might surprise you.
Okay.
It's very different from his stuff. But yeah, Williams introduced a kind of stream of consciousness style of comedy that was unprecedented. And I think, and you're right, no one has quite picked up that baton because it's just so. There's
and to the point where it was so you know what do they say? It's like you know you've made it when they do imitations of you. Was it on South Park or something where people would do Robin Williams imitations where it's like, and now I'm lowering my voice and talking about something and I just can't stop. You know,
yeah, super fast and I'm hopping from topic to topic. I mean, it's funny if I relate it to anything. It reminds me of the character in Shine. You know how his brain would just go from thing to thing to thing, you know, and that was actually a mental illness, but Williams knew how to, like, steer that river in a way, you know, where he could bring it back around and make it, you know, it was amazing to behold on stage. I mean, he's one of the all-time greats.
But I do remember growing up watching the Carnegie Hall.
Right.
Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, no, I never
special.
Got to see him live, but yeah, just seeing the
last words, I remember that was... Great.
And then the next day, at the age of 89, Lauren Bacall had a stroke just a few weeks shy of her 90th birthday. And again, another career the likes of which we will never see again. I mean, she's one of the last, I think, of that great Hollywood golden age.
We've still got Olivia de Havilland. She's hanging in there.
Yeah, well, she outlasted Joan. That was, I think, the big thing.
Margaret O'Brien.
Margaret O'Brien still around.
Is Charisse still alive?
Yeah, I think she is. I think she was in that Julia Binoche movie, wasn't she?
Oh, God, we're playing Dead Not Dead now, aren't we? Shoot. Mm-hmm. I think Sid Charisse is alive. June Allison is alive.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some folks
up. She's no Lauren Bacall.
You know, one of the storied careers. You know, she was a teen model for Harper's Bazaar. She was recommended by Slim Hayward to Howard Hawks, who cast her in Have and Have Not. She fell in love with her co-star Humphrey Bogart, who was a couple decades her senior. They got married when she was, I think, 20.
Oh, yeah.
He died 12 years later, but they had one of the great, you know, romances of the Hollywood era.
Before there was Bennifer. Before there was...
There was Brangelina, yeah.
Yeah, it was Bogey and McCall were the... You know.
Totally. And she, her memoir By Myself is a great read.
You know, I think I listened to some of it and, you know, cause I'm interested in her and I liked her. And she did before, I mean, she does have one of those classic Hollywood stories, like the Ava Gardner, she was in a picture.
Right.
And, you know, for all the people who talk about, you know, oh, they just are hiring Victoria's Secret models. They have always hired
the hot girl.
You get one shot. You know, and then, you know, for every Lauren Bacall, there's all the other models who screwed it up, you know, who didn't have it.
Right.
So you get one shot, one or two shots. And so, yeah, they bring her, and she had experience in theater. She did train and stuff, and, you know, and eventually, you know, it was important to her to go back to doing theater. What was the...
Applause and Woman of the Year. She won two Tonys. Yeah, I mean...
So she was legit, but there was... gosh, I think it was because when she was 20 and she became Bogey and McCall that there was such a, I don't want to say like self-importance to the biography, but the autobiography, but I guess there was. She was in that world where they were the center of everything from a very young age.
And, you know, I think the idea that, I'm sure when they first got together, people were like, oh, well, you know, who's this bimbo? But she clearly was his equal in a lot of ways and was, they were truly partners, you know.
Especially coming from his wife at the time.
Mayo Method, who was, she was a piece of work. And they were very active politically. They went to Washington to protest the House Un-American Activities Committee. She was Bacall was always unrepentantly liberal. She campaigned for Adlai Stevenson.
She still couldn't get Bogart to like Jews, though, I don't think. Well. Even when he married one.
I was going
to
say.
she was, you know, Lauren, Betty Persky.
Betty Persky, yeah.
Related to, was it Shimon Peres? Or?
I don't know.
Yeah. But Jewish, but still couldn't get...
Well, he liked one Jew. So that was a start. You know. And here's somebody who, you know, operated in the sort of the Hollywood studio system and then flew to Europe to do two movies for Lars von Trier.
Yeah.
You know, she was in Dogville and Manderley.
I gotta watch those.
Yeah, you know, she was an English voice in a Miyazaki movie. I mean, like
she was the voice of Tuesday Morning. You know, the poor man's Ross, Dress for Less. So
my niece works there. Or that was her summer job.
And the fancy feast cat food.
And yeah. I remember those High Point coffee ads.
And I think she did some Metropolitan Insurance. Did she do the insurance commercial? I mean, but this is a voice that you knew.
Yeah.
I mean that was a voice, and yeah. I don't know. I don't think she even smoked cigarettes.
It was always very whiskey. I mean, at 20, she had a whiskey.
They all smoked cigarettes.
But they all did. But you would think, though, I think she must have quit after a certain time, but still had it. I mean,
yeah, because her husband, you know, her husband died of, you know, her first husband, Humphrey Bogart, died of cancer. But you know, in the book, she talked about she had this crazily tempestuous affair with Sinatra. She married Jason Robards, who was another alcoholic.
Oh, yeah, Sinatra like moved in right when Bogart, you know,
moved out. For all the screen legends that we have now and the big actresses, like it's a different thing. And the era that she represents, she's one of the last ones left that was our connection to that. It's like how one day all the World War II veterans will be dead. All the people who remember, you know, Louis B. Mayer will be dead. He's not dead.
He's dead.
But I'm just saying the people of that
Didn't
era.
The last
Hollywood.
World War One guy just die.
Could be.
Yeah. Like the last one.
It's quite possible. So
say a Kaddish for Lauren and Golem.
Menachem and Robin.
Robin gets a nanu. He was nanu Robin. But
we'll miss you all. You all brought something very unique to the table of this crazy dinner.
And now. Let's be cops.
That's where the cinema is now. Let's Be Cops stars Damon Wayans Jr. and Jake Johnson. They are best friends who moved to L.A. from Ohio, and they've both turned...
They're 30, and they haven't made it yet. Can you even believe it? They should just go home and or die. Because now they're old and nothing is ever going to work for them again.
Wayans wants to be a video game designer. Jake Johnson, it's never really clear what he wants to be. He was a college football player who threw his knee out and now is just sort of
Jake Johnson coasting. From New Girl.
From New Girl, yes. And Damon Wayans Jr. from, well, I guess he was now on New Girl, too. From New Girl. Happy Endings.
Oh, okay.
But from Happy Endings, which was, for me, the greatest sitcom of the last 10 years, except maybe that and 30 Rock. This movie isn't very funny. Despite the fact that they're in it, and Keegan-Michael Key, and Rob Riggle...
Calling it not very funny is being generous.
Well, here's the thing.
There are, like, two funny moments.
There are movies where I never laugh, and this one I laughed six or seven times?
Two times.
I was maybe not as hating it as much as you were, but I wasn't loving it. It's the setup is basically they go to a costume party that turns out not to be a costume party. I've never seen that joke before. I thought it was a costume party. Dressed as policemen, they're walking home, and people think they're cops. And, you know, they are feared and respected, and women are hugging on them, and, you know, because everyone loves the LAPD.
Right. I was going to say, this is Los Angeles.
Yes. We adore them here. And of course, yeah, this is like the worst week in current history to have a movie called Let's Be Cops, I think, given what's happening in the world. But yeah, even with all that, it's just not funny. And the situations are kind of contrived and there's no stakes. You know, of course, they get involved with the mobsters who come after them. And it's one of those movies where there are eight people in Los Angeles because everybody is connected to everybody else somehow. Like the waitress that Damon Wayans Jr. is in love with, played by Nina Dobrev, works at a restaurant that the Russian mobsters are leaning on. And those same Russian mobsters hit Jake Johnson's car, which is why they harass them. And
what could have they done better? Because there are obviously funny movies about cops.
Well, I think the masquerade is a funny idea. The idea of these two losers feeling like big shots when they put the uniform on, while at the same time not really having any idea how to do what cops do. It's a funny premise on paper, and you could build on that in any number of directions, but they don't pick any of those directions in this movie.
People imitating cops. I'm just thinking of like Beverly Hills Cop, 21 Jump Street.
Sure, yeah.
More about people who are cops than going undercover imitating regular people.
Yeah, this is sort of the opposite, that regular people are imitating cops.
And can that has there been another movie like that, and can it work?
I don't know that anybody else has done it, but you can do, you know, there's always that kind of mistaken identity farce, or you know, a movie like Catch Me If You Can, that's about ongoing thing of fooling people into believing, and how you can, if instead of shrinking back when you're called on it, you like turn on them and put them on the spot, then they're more willing to back off. You know,
I just feel like the potential of all the jokes, and I haven't seen this movie, there's something so dark about it, though, because you think of all the abuses and horrible things that you can do when you are a cop,
right.
Yes. Versus, say...
If the sequel is Let's Be Cops, Bad Lieutenant, then, you know...
if this movie had anything on its mind, then everything you're saying could have happened in the film.
Alas, but it does not.
This film has nothing on its mind, and no... Even it doesn't even have the interest in placing these people in a recognizable real world, because whoever decided, you know, that this farce should take place in an alternate universe where the things you know about life don't apply, you know, okay, here's the list of everything gets wrong. I'm pulling it directly from my review from movies.com. Here's what it does not understand. Here's what it gets completely wrong. The workplace, friendship, crime, dating, male bonding, race, video games, masquerade balls, police, how many hours are in a day, and all women everywhere. Especially now, in the light of recent events, race. And there is a really great article on Grantland this week, written by the film critic Wesley Morris, about what this film says about race and black actors, you know, and what this film does without even thinking about it in terms of how black Americans deal with the police. You could say that what he wrote is based on a, you know, pulling in other information, sort of reading of the film in the light of the stuff in Ferguson. But even if that stuff wasn't happening in Ferguson this week, everything he says in this article is true. The relationship that even black actors have with the camera in a film set in a world where race is not a thing, but it absolutely is a thing. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really great article. You should all go read it.
Wait, and far more interesting than the movie.
Wesley Morris.
And far more interesting than the movie.
Where can we find it?
Grantland. I'll post a link to that on our Facebook page too. And Wesley, when the
he's got a Pulitzer.
He's got a Pulitzer.
Yeah.
Boston
Globe. Yeah.
Is he the first film critic since Ebert to win one?
I don't know.
I think he might be. But yeah. Anyway, he's a dude.
I like him and I like Ty Burr. I like both the Boston.
Well, I don't think he writes for Boston Globe anymore, does he?
That's where he was before. Morris. I think he might be all Grantland all the time.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But yeah, this it's an annoying movie, and I just it's weird though. They didn't show it. They didn't screen it. In fact,
always a good sign.
One of our colleagues got a great sort of Orwellian email from a publicist at Fox that said, "We are not screening the film, and there are no more screenings."
And then they turned around and screened it.
Oh, of course they did.
Yeah. Because Mark saw it on the Monday night before the Wednesday opening.
Interesting.
Suddenly, boom, he wound up in a radio screen.
Of course. So it was Orwellian and a total lie, as it turns out. So Bibbs and I went Tuesday at 10 to see it. And boy, I had forgotten what movie audiences are like. It's been a while since
What are you talking about?
When you're with the Muggles.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good way to put it.
What's the name of the show again that you're on?
Wizard Wars.
Thank you.
There we go. Thanks, Hermione. when you and I went to see Step Up All In, there were three other people in the theater. So it was, there was the one woman who took a phone call, but she at least made her way outside, talking all the way. But this was a packed house.
With non-critics.
It was a packed house for Let's Be Cops.
Yes, at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday night. Why are you people here?
In a big house or a small house?
Big house.
You're kidding me.
We were sitting in the Statler and Waldorf seats. It was one of those houses.
Oh, you were at the Grove.
Yeah.
Oh, the Muppet seats.
What was that about?
I don't know, but it was packed. And people with the phones would not knock it off
But it doesn't matter. In a movie like Let's Be Cops, it doesn't matter. Yeah. It's the second screen experience. It doesn't matter.
No, but they were people kept taking these selfies with the flash, and it was
during the movie?
Well, right before the movie started, and I was you better knock it off. And then finally the movie did start, they were still doing it, and I think Bibbs was like, can you turn your phone off? And then somebody turned theirs on in the middle of the movie, and I tried scolding them, and it was just, right, it was pointless. It was Let's Be Cops.
When you're in a movie like that.
You're not watching Schindler's List.
Yeah. When you're in a film like that with a regular audience of paying ticket jerks, there are no rules, nothing matters, it's the Purge, and so it's
somebody on Twitter suggested the Purge 3 should be that that for 24 hours the police have to follow the law.
I know this is a complete digression, but there's someone tweeting as the Purge right now on Twitter, and it's killing me. It's so hilarious.
There's a weird running gag about a giraffe.
He doesn't have a lot of followers yet, but you should really go follow him.
What is it, At The Purge? Or?
I think it's just At The Purge, yeah. He talked about the fake Louisville, Kentucky hoax purge that went down this week. And he talked about how his pet giraffe got killed in the Purge.
Oh.
And now there are T-shirts. This is Remember Carl,
The Purge. Carl.
Hashtag Carl, Purge 2014. And it's maybe other people won't find this as amusing
maybe
as I
not.
Did, but I laughed until I cried over this guy's tweets.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't seen either of those movies.
Okay, so also this week, The Expendables 3.
Yes, which is
not the worst.
Better and worse than the last two purges. Than the last
two Expendables.
Than the last two Expendables.
I felt like it was less elbow you in the ribs, jokey about its meta-ness.
And that is why it is better.
Yeah.
Good. I'm always a fan of that.
Unfortunately, they devote the second act to putting together a band of youngsters because suddenly Stallone grows a conscience about dragging his friends into certain death. And so he decides he's going to drag some young strangers into certain death instead, and that'll be better.
And that is where it is worse.
So then we have like a good chunk of the movie given over to recruiting the kids, who are not interesting and not well written at all. They are played by the likes of Kellan Lutz, who is pretty but terrible, mm-hmm. and Ronda Rousey.
He was great as Lutz.
He was great as Lutz's nephew on 30 Rock. Rock. That's the one great thing he ever did. Ronda Rousey, who is a real life MMA or Gen UFC MMA. Or something. Yeah. She kicks a lot of ass.
Less expensive than Michelle Rodriguez.
Basically,
Gina Carano,
less ethnic. Okay.
You don't know that was a consideration.
No, I'm kidding. Okay. I don't know. She's fine. But none of those characters are written in an interesting way at all, except like they keep calling Stallone old man, you know, that sort of thing. And they know the internet, that's all they've got as characters.
I think it's funny how Jason Statham sort of has this smirk on his face through the whole movie when people say, oh, you're old. And really what he's thinking is, everyone else here is old.
Yeah.
I'm just
bald.
I'm in my 40s and I'm bald. And I'm still viable and have an action career. Right now, as we speak, I am the transporter. And these guys...
Crank.
Yeah, also I am Crank. Yeah,
And he's always the best thing in these movies. He's the best at being an action guy, and he's the best at being, you know, the quote-unquote funny. Mm-hmm. Terry Crews is always fun to watch. He pops up briefly.
And then they sideline him in a hospital.
Yes, totally. He becomes, like, the plot.
Same with Jet Li. He's on for two seconds.
And all he does is shoot guns.
Yeah.
Why do you put Jet Li in your movie and not have him, like, kick someone in the face? Well, can he not do it anymore?
That's the...
Okay, Jet Li in a movie and then get the stunt guy to kick somebody in the face wearing Jet Li's tracksuit, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know,
they get injured easily. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know how long one's career is as a
Harrison Ford totally slumming.
Seemingly enjoying
himself, definitely. And I thought Wesley Snipes is actually
Wesley Snipes is the best thing in the movie.
Yeah,
he's funny and has that wild eyes thing.
Like he's excited to be back at work.
Oh God! he needs to make some money.
And I got to give it up for the very creepy Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson is great.
Who is very smart about taking on roles that allow him to be very creepy.
Yeah.
You know, he was like in Machete Kills, and in this one, it's like, okay, everyone hates me. I'm going to be the villainiest villain ever.
I'll tell you
so
the
that
best.
You can so that I can benefit from you hating me, and it works.
It can be a good. It's like a cathartic experience of taking what we've heard on the news, on the recorded answering machine phone calls, and using that actually.
I was hoping they might throw, because these movies are so winky about acknowledging themselves, I thought maybe they would throw in a scene where he calls Ronda Rousey sugar tits, but they did not. What are you going to do?
You know they shot that.
Maybe
that.
It'll be on the DVD.
Yeah.
Is Schwarzenegger in this too?
Oh yeah.
Bruce
Willis bailed. He wanted too much money, and they make jokes about that, about Harrison Ford being like, "Yeah, he's out of the picture. I'm your guy now."
That's what old people called movies.
Should I take my dad? Should I take my dad to see it? That's what because my dad loves Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It is a take your dad kind of movie.
Yeah, right. Fine.
In the same way that the 100-foot journey, for all its problems, is a take your mom movie.
I'm gonna do that one.
Fair enough.
The thing with this is that it has the most coherent action filmmaking.
Oh yeah,
of the three,
it does. In terms of like, where is everyone in relation to everyone else?
The camera doesn't cut away every 2 seconds so that I'm having a seizure.
Not at all. This Australian guy who he made a film I've never heard of, and he just got hired to do. He's doing the American remake of The Raid, which let's just hope that never happens. But anyway, like, there's the big set piece at the end is they're in some generic stand, and they're fighting in like the crumbling remains of the Grand Budapest Hotel, basically. And you've got people in the lobby and over here by the pool and on the roof, and da da da. And you always know who's where. And when they cut back and forth, it's very coherently told, as opposed to, say, any Michael Bay movie where you're like, you just throw your hands in the air and give up. So, yeah, I'll give him credit for that, too.
Snipes, Gibson, great. Schwarzenegger, lazy, still completely lazy. Walks from point A to point B, then from point B to point A, has a cigar in his mouth the entire time, is on screen for 5 minutes, does almost nothing. The film has a weird love-hate relationship with its lone female character, where they want to be alternately in awe of her, treating her as though she might have to be the damsel in distress every once in a while.
Right.
And lusting for her and making her, weirdly, lust after Stallone, which is
ew,
not a great thing.
Stallone, who co-wrote.
Yeah. So it's they don't know what to do with her, yeah, and that's unfortunate because, well,
these movies are designed to be sausage fests, and so they have not thought about, right, how do we incorporate a woman into this nonsense.
Right.
So,
even though she's kicking everyone in the face.
Totally.
Yeah. So, and clearly doing all of her own stunts, because, yes, that's what her job is anyway.
Right.
So, it's...
Also, this is the first PG-13 one.
And that's the biggest problem.
So, no, lots of bullets, no blood.
All the cool violence from the first two is gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Giver, I did not see. You did. Hey, kids, it's another YA movie.
I'm going to take this out in 60 seconds because we're pressed for time here.
Go for it.
Based on the 1993 novel by Lois Lowry, this was a YA novel that really was a template for future YA novels.
Yeah, this is kind of the John Carter of YA
movies. So when Divergent has a picking ceremony for the kids when they turn 18, they got it from The Giver.
Yeah.
But now we're seeing The Giver, finally, and it looks like The Giver is copying all these other YA movies, when in reality, The Giver was sort of the first-ish.
Yeah. Jeff Bridges was trying to make this movie for ages.
And the execution of this movie is so relentlessly dumb. The script is so ham-fisted and so full of its own seriousness, mm-hmm, which I'm sure serves the novel very well.
Right.
But here, unlike a lot of the other YA books that have a sort of like young, sort of light touch to them, mm-hmm, in certain moments, not always, but not consistently, but when it needs to have it, it has it. This is not that film. This is the kind of movie where the child, because you live in a future utopia / dystopia, where human feeling and memory has been erased so that everyone is calm and orderly, and you have a little child who says, "Mom, what is love?
Baby, don't hurt me."
Yeah. It's that kind of film.
Yeah.
And it's utterly dumb and dull.
How's Meryl?
She's a hologram, and that is why you need to see it. Because...
Does she duet with Kanye?
She is mostly a hologram throughout the entire film.
Wow.
Has crazy, like...
I've seen the bangs in the
bangs.
Trailer, yeah.
I was talking to Bibbs. We were watching it together. And every time Meryl Streep said something that was, you know, for the dystopia, you know, wanting to keep order, I'd think, well, she's right. She's totally right. Your love and your feelings and your kissing and your makeouts and your dancing, that's a great, fine. You don't need any of that stuff for a happy, orderly society in life. Just everybody behave. Everybody put on your gray smock and ride your bike and don't kill each other.
So basically,
I turned to Bibbs at one point and I said, "Meryl Streep is right." All would just obey Meryl Streep. There'd be no problem.
So
here,
if Meryl was the Führer, you would be fine with her brand of fascism.
Okay, yeah. I mean, yeah. And so there is a crazy end part. The kid, the special teen who saves everybody.
The special snowflake.
Yeah. He sees in color. The whole rest of the movie's in black and white, but he sees in color. Because he's more intuitive. He's going to be the receiver of memories from Jeff Bridges, who is the giver. They were going to have Taylor Swift be the receiver of memories, but that just did not pan out. And then the kid escapes from the world, and he goes through the wall of memories, and it comes on everybody, and they all get their memories back, and they all want to start kissing. And
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, who cares? it is the most hilarious bad teen YA movie that I've seen in quite some time. I urge you to see it because it's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, it's one of your zero stars.
It's a zero.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So like when Dave gives me half a star, it means ignore it and it's terrible. But if it's zero, it's terrible and go run out.
Other reviewers that I've read are like, well, it's fine here and it's fine there, and I think to myself, no, that is not correct. It is not fine anywhere. Hmm. It is utterly stupid and must be seen.
Well, all right.
Don't ignore the giver.
No.
Go to the giver.
I'll do real quick. I saw What If, because I did not realize until it was about to come out that it was directed by the guy who made Goon, which is a movie that I love that nobody saw, with Sean William Scott as a brawler who gets put on a hockey team just to start fights.
How long ago was this movie?
A couple years ago.
Oh.
It's great.
It's really terrific. And Liev Schreiber's in it, and Alison Pill, and a movie I love. Of course, this guy also directed Take Me Home Tonight, but I think that got taken out of his hands. Anyway, so What If, screened last year at Toronto under the better title, The F Word, referring to Friend.
But wasn't there also a documentary about punks becoming dads called The...
Oh, The Other F Word. Yeah, I saw that one too. Yeah. So What If, Daniel Radcliffe is a medical school dropout who has been nursing a bad breakup for a year, and goes to a party and meets an animator played by Zoe Kazan, and they immediately spark and everything's great, but she has a boyfriend. Played by Rafe Spall. And so, but she likes Daniel Radcliffe a lot and wants to be friends. And so, you know, he sort of begrudgingly goes along with that, although all the while he's sort of carrying a torch for her. And it sounds like a million other romantic comedies. And I think it kind of comes down to the execution. And yeah. I think the execution's really good. The two leads are super charming and they have fun chemistry. And, you know, you've got Rafe Spall, you've got Adam Driver. Like, it's a really cool supporting cast. You know, it's not going to blow the doors off. It's not, you know, a complete 180 reinvention of this genre. But it does the genre thing really well. And it's really fun and charming. And I had a great time. And I saw it by myself, which I don't usually like to do. And I laughed a lot and heartily. So, you know, as opposed to Let's Be Cops. So, yeah, check out What If.
And speaking of blow the doors off... the trip to Italy. You were only supposed to.
That was a good segue there.
Thanks. Well, we could have gone. You should host a television show. I was going to bring Lauren McCall back. yes. That's the one movie I have seen.
Well, all right.
Now, and you know what? I think
you chose wisely of this batch. Yes. Now, had you seen The Trip?
I had not seen it before, except for... like a year ago, my friend Paul, who I will circle back around to, showed me the clip of them doing the Michael Caine impression. And I was like, that's funny, but I wasn't interested in seeing the rest of the film for some reason. And so, though, knowing that I had to see The Trip to Italy, I was like, well, I want to see the first one. So I did. It's on Netflix. Just see it. It's, you know.
And if you want to see the like 6-episode British TV show that it's edited down from, that's on Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay. All right. But it's, you tell us.
So The Trip to Italy. Now, both these films, it's a follow-up to The Trip, which was also written and directed by Michael Winterbottom. It stars Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon as themselves, in air quotes, because they're playing characters with their own names and with a lot of career things in it, in similarity, but not... It's not a documentary.
It's like the Curb Your Enthusiasm world, where funny people are playing heightened versions of themselves in contrived situations.
Exactly, and with different life details. Like in this one, Coogan has a son, which in real life he does not, and in this one, like Brydon has a very young daughter, but he actually has like 4 kids.
Yeah.
So they have this kind of prickly relationship because like Brydon is super popular in England but not anywhere else, and Coogan is kind of a star in the U.S. or, you know, a known quantity in the U.S.
The only one I know, yeah.
Kind of a cult star in Britain, so, you know, they have sort of this weird, you know, jealousy of each other and kind of whatever. So in the first movie, they drive around the British countryside and they go to all these amazing restaurants for an Observer piece that they're writing.
Which is, you know, news to a lot of us, I think, that, you know, Britain has amazing,
gourmet restaurants.
Up in the north, you know, that's the thing. You go to the nice hotel and the nice restaurant and the Lake District.
Yeah, you can be out in the middle of nowhere and get this amazing food. So they've been asked to do it again, but this time in Italy. And so they go and... I saw it again this weekend because our friend David Z was visiting and really wanted to see it. And I actually picked up on some details I didn't catch the first time. So, like, Coogan has been on a TV show that he'd been doing in the States that just got canceled. Whereas Bryden has just been offered a part in a Michael Mann movie, you know. So it's kind of a switch off from the way things go from the first one. In the first movie, Coogan has kind of an ill-advised fling with a woman, and this time Bryden has one, even though he's got a wife and child at home. What?
I don't know how many, how, you know.
I don't think that's a spoiler. That happens pretty early on.
I haven't seen it yet, but I don't. I guess I can't go now.
No, it's not.
I guess you ruined it for me now.
It's just a plot element.
It's a reversal of kind of what you saw in the first one, which was just enough for me. You know, just the tone of the first one was beautiful, and the tone of this one, where there's so many, you think something's going to happen, doesn't, and he just like shuts it down. Yeah. Like, nope, we're smarter than you. This is not an American movie. That thing that you thought was going to happen actually doesn't happen, and we're going to go this way because we actually have finesse.
Yes, we know how to write things. What's cool about these movies is that they sort of seduce you in with, you know, this beautiful countryside and these beautiful meals that are just, you know, you watch them get prepared and you watch them get eaten. It's, you know, that's always exciting. And the two of them are so funny, and they're doing their shtick, and they're doing their really funny impersonations. Like, in the first movie, they did this great legendary Michael Caine, and then this time, they sort of up the stakes, and they do almost like the entire cast of The Dark Knight Rises, which is...
Oh, my gosh.
I was crying laughing.
And I hadn't even seen it, so I still was crying, too.
Well, yeah. The two ladies sitting next to me, not laughing the entire movie. I don't know if they got any of it, but... Who knows? But
It's a bit laddish.
It is a little British. But the thing is, you know, so they kind of suck you in with all that sort of surfacey fun stuff. Like, oh, look at the Amalfi Coast, and look at this plate of mussels, and oh, they're so funny. But these movies have a really strong undercurrent of melancholy and regret and sort of midlife crisis.
Wordsworth, Shelley. Yeah. I mean, the first one was all about Wordsworth, who I guess was an English... I don't know, I was an English major. I can't even remember. I can't tell them apart. Shelley and Byron figure more into this one because they're going to Italy, so don't, you know...
Yeah, so they go to all these, like, where they lived, where they were buried, and kind of talking about, you know, comparing themselves to how they experienced Italy the way those guys did. And it's this almost sort of rumination about aging and about...
Families
and choices made and not made, and there's, you know, and it's funny because like the ending is so great. And the first time I saw it, I just thought, oh, it's sort of wonderfully elliptical. And then I really paid attention this time to what's being said and what's happening. It's like, oh, that's a great ending. Like that, they really, without, again.
You're going to give that away too.
No, I'm not going to give it away. But again, Winterbottom knows how to write. And he, without bludgeoning you over the head, like really kind of paints out this portrait of, not even just of these guys, but of our generation right now and how we perceive the world and what we think of as our responsibilities in it. It's an extraordinary movie.
It's, you know, it reminded me, of course, I can't help thinking of the Before Sunrise, Before Sunset.
Sure.
In that it's, you know, it also reminded me of Dolly Parton. You know, it takes a lot of money to look this cheap. It takes a lot of really good filmmaking
to look this improvised.
Yep. When you just think about all the camera work and camera, I mean, you know, it's not like you just follow a boat. You know, they just it takes a while, and you know, just even driving through the streets of Rome, that's a lot of work. I would imagine.
You know, and how many takes do they have to do of, you know, like of eating? You know,
yeah, and it seems like you're really along with these two British guys who are your best friends, but slash frenemies who, though, like you're spending just the amount of time with them that you would like to spend. You really wouldn't want to spend the entire week with them.
But 2 hours is fine.
The 2 hours, you're getting all the good bits, and it's great. It's got just a great. I don't know. Yeah, like the Before Sunrise, before, you know, it's got a melancholy and a sweetness. It's how mumblecore should be.
Oh, there you go. That's for
but
the
it's not because it's because this is how this is all the work and talent and effort and brilliance that goes into making it look effortless.
Sure.
Whereas mumblecore is just following people around.
It is actually effortless. Yeah. It's a movie that I'm really glad I saw it again because I think I appreciated it a lot more. And it's a movie that sneaks up on you and. I think I said in my review, it is both sugarcoating and bitter pill, but you enjoy both. Mm. Trip to Italy.
It's like prosciutto wrapped around melon.
Yeah, there you go.
Which is a lovely Italian appetizer to have while you're watching it, or just go home and have some. But it's got that.
I am going to Italy next week, and I was already excited, but this movie has made me doubly excited. So that's going to be great. Yeah. I don't know if we've mentioned on the show, I'm going to the Venice Film Festival.
Yes.
Which is crazy.
Rub it in.
But there'll be one more podcast before you do that.
One more before we do that, and then the idea is to tape one...
While you're there.
While I'm there.
Minus me.
Minus you, but with a dear friend of ours who is a film critic who will be there.
Who?
If I I don't want to say it in case it doesn't work.
Jealous.
But
it'll be a big surprise.
If the tech is
You'll never miss me.
If the tech is not a disaster, then we'll do it. It'll be great. Oh, shush.
I'm going to be here. No, not you won't miss me.
Oh, you mean the viewers.
The listeners are not going to miss me.
No, of course they will.
Have you guys ever been to Venice together?
No.
No, I've never been to Italy. I've never...
What?
I know. Well,
Paris. To make myself feel better, you are going at the worst time of the year. So, Ferragosto, when all the Italians go on vacation, the ones that stay behind are here to rip you off.
Exactly. I know. But it's when they do the Biennale. I got no choice. What happened was, my big...
Like, we have 5 minutes, by the way.
My big summer jaunt to Europe that was supposed to happen when I was in college, we bombed Libya. And my best friend who was supposed to go with me...
We're going to go to Libya?
Whose parents were from Mobile, Alabama. We weren't going to Libya, but they just were convinced... They were convinced somehow that anyone with an American passport was going to get, like, shot in front of the Eiffel Tower or something, so they didn't let him go.
They told me it was a Jewish passport.
There's tons of Europe that I've never been to, despite the fact that my parents were both born there, but what are you going
to
do?
We went to Paris together.
We did.
We went to Madrid together.
Yeah. So we're working on it, piece by piece.
It's far away. When you live in L.A., it's far away. It's easier to... I'd rather go to Latin America than go to Europe.
Not me.
It's expensive. Hot. So much cheaper. You know? And you lose weight because you get a worm, you know?
You're really selling it, Fox. All right, DVD picks.
I already said hot t-shirts. Oh, it's right. On YouTube.
Okay.
Or any film by my favorite mumblecore director, Andrew Bujalski.
Oh, I don't know that.
He did
Funny Ha Ha.
Oh, I couldn't get through.
Mutual Appreciation, Beeswax, Computer Chess. I dig all those movies.
Oh, you know what? I got that confused with Francis Ha, which I couldn't get.
I love Francis Ha, but... Not for everyone.
I couldn't get it.
All right, fair enough. My DVD pick this week is Pedro Almodovar's Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down, which has been unavailable for ever. Like, there was some weird DVD rights issue. His stuff goes in and out of print really quickly. I don't know what's happening there, but Criterion is putting out a very lovely Blu-ray this week with tons of extras, including, I think in the booklet, there's an interview with Wes Anderson about Almodovar. Where he just talks about how Almodovar has influenced him. So it's got a lot of good stuff.
Do you see Penelope Cruz's boobies in this? Is this...
You would, except she's not in it. It's Victoria Abril.
Oh, and never mind. Maybe her boobies?
You do see Victoria Abril's boobies. Okay. This movie's NC-17, mainly because of a wind-up tub toy, but that's another issue. If you've never seen it, you should totally see it.
Okay. All right, wait, and who's the guy in it?
It's Antonio Banderas.
Okay. Why am I getting that confused with Javier Bardem and... that's just my fantasies.
I think so.
Yeah. Those are just my fantasies. Okay, I'll see it. And so my pick, speaking of the Departed this week, a couple from Disney Toon Studios, which got hit hard... the Tinkerbell movies. Oh, yes. The straight-to-DVD or straight-to-TV Tinkerbell movies. If you like Frozen, yes.
Jonathan Lasseter.
Yeah. The Tinkerbell movies, they were for younger kids, but actually so good. So please do yourself a favor. There's one, two, and three.
There are three of them?
There are three. See the first one. Just try the very first, just Tinkerbell, the movie that came out for Disney Channel.
She talks, right?
And it's actually really well, it's really well done, especially from a, Disney heroine perspective.
So she's a ride-on sister?
She's basically an engineer.
Wow.
What a tinkering fairy would do. Although there's also some other, I don't agree with the whole benevolent, there's still a queen and
I don't agree with benevolence either. So
benevolent monarchy. And also some talk about what one is supposed to do and born. So it's actually there's a lot of philosophical conversations in there. But it's beautifully done. It's it's the precursor to the Frozen movie. And it's wonderful stuff about female relationships. Check it out. It's adorable.
I did not
know. I had written those off. And did not know that any one of them existed except the first one.
No, Tinkerbell, and then Tinkerbell and the Winter Fairy is the third one. There's one in the middle. Great stuff.
All right. All linked on our Facebook page.
All right. It's 10:39. Technically, we have 1 minute left, but I'm going to read two letters.
Okay.
And then we are done.
Go.
All right. All right, guys, it's Adam, the guy with the list so nice, you read it twice. I literally pumped my fist in the air walking down the street when Dave recalled his story of victory over the rude seniors at Monacamana. One point of correction, the name of the Ohio town that the movie is set to be hosted by, Massillon, is pronounced Massillon. I don't know how I pronounced it.
I think you said Massillon.
Massillon.
Massillon
is how you say it.
Like masculine without the C.
I see. The city was the locale of a documentary called Go Tigers, which I did see.
Oh, yeah.
Which, like Friday Night Lights, focused on what I have always referred to as Massillon's football cult. And finally, when I moved into my new apartment this spring, I came across a number of cassette tapes and was wondering if you were still accepting them despite your lovely new theme song, Love and the Cinema, Adam. Yes, we accept all cassette tapes.
We won't play them on the air. We're happy to take them off your hands if you want to get rid of
them. We do play them when I'm cooking dinner doing the dishes. So that's very important. And it'll just grow the cassette wall in the kitchen. All right, here's a top 10 list.
Okay.
Ellen, when we read a top 10 list, we vote on whether or not that film is worth being on a top 10 list. We judge the listeners harshly.
Okay. I love it.
They're scored in their percentage.
If we do not agree with their list, they get points taken off. So you're about to join us in this task.
Judging something? Wonderful. Yeah. Okay.
Hi, guys. Loved this week's podcast, and I wanted to chime in with my favorite at the movies story.
Oh.
We asked people also to tell us
funny stories,
ridiculous things that happened to them at theaters.
Not about the TV show.
No.
It happened to my husband when he was in college, seeing the second Lord of the Rings movie in Tulsa, Oklahoma, over Christmas break. He was there with a group of friends in a mostly full theater. A week or two after the movie opened, and an elderly couple was sitting behind them. The couple whispers during trailers, but nothing too egregious, and nobody wants to shush old people. Oh, I do. However, the whispering continued once the movie started and became more agitated, particularly on the part of the man. Jeff and his friends were trying to decide whether to say something about 15 minutes into the movie when the old man finally says loudly and with great exasperation, "What's a hobbit?" As the theater tries not to laugh, the couple files out, with the woman apologizing to the folks around them, saying, "I'm sorry, we just have no idea what's going on."
I feel their pain, frankly.
I know you weren't reading all the top tens, but here is my top 10 of 2013.
Okay.
Okay. The Act of Killing.
Oh, sure, yeah.
All is Lost.
Yeah.
Computer Chess. I just said it as a rebuttal to your anti-mumblecore screed. Cutie and the Boxer.
Okay.
Her.
Yeah.
Post Tenebra Lux.
Mm-hmm.
Spring Breakers.
Yeah.
Stories We Tell.
Okay.
A Touch of Sin.
Mmm.
Extreme Color.
Yeah.
This is a 100% knife list.
Absolutely.
Do you disagree? Any of those that you saw that you didn't like?
The only one I have seen was Spring Breakers, and I didn't like it. So.
Oh no! Oh, that means
you are 97%.
That means you're
knife.
Now only 97% knife, Katie. That's from Katie. Mm. Thank you, Katie.
I don't know that we've ever let a guest.
Oh
know,
yeah, my opinion
judge
doesn't
before.
Count because
it
I,
does too.
It
counts
it.
Now. This is a new thing I'm doing.
Okay.
All the guests get to judge the listeners.
But I'm impressed by just how many movies on there that I didn't know. It was like the time like Sasha Gray came on Rotten Tomatoes to give her top five favorite movies. I didn't know any of them. I mean, and they were like Werner Herzog. You know, they were, you know.
Yes.
Wow.
They weren't Annie's DP Weekend or anything?
No. That was, I'm
an art film. Woman.
No. She is no, she's very smart, and I like Girlfriend Experience a lot. Actually, speaking of which, if you haven't seen it, IndieWire or CriticWire did a survey of critics about like favorite and least favorite and most underrated Soderbergh movies.
Hmm.
And I meant to give more love to Girlfriend Experience, but yeah, that's some interesting results.
What were you going to say before Alonso cut you off?
I don't remember. No, I'm just saying the only reason I'm just so intimidated because I haven't seen any of those movies. You know, you stop hosting a movie critic show. You don't get to go see her.
You still get to judge this total stranger.
All right, and then I will.
And
judge.
You know way more about magic than we do now. So you know,
which is no. I know a lot about magic history, which is so fascinating. So once again, watch Wizard Wars Tuesdays after Face Off on Sci-Fi Channel. That's 10/9 Central.
Ellen Fox, where can people find you online?
At Ellen Fox on Twitter, and also I'm building a website, ellenfox.com. Not on the Facebook, can't figure it out.
Fair enough. All right. At Ellen Fox, ellenfox.com. As always, we thank you for listening. I will skip the list of other podcasts. You know what they are. You can go back and listen. This program, of course, you can review on iTunes. Please do, because it really does
do it positively.
Boost our presence. And you
don't
can subscribe
say mean
for free.
About me. I get hurt easily and I cry.
You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. Like our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. Check into the show at tvtag.com. You can email us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with lists or anecdotes or questions or whatever else. That's also the PayPal address to use to purchase a Linoleum Knife t-shirt.
Yeah, $20.
$20 within the United
Give
States.
Give us your $20.
Let us know what size you wear in a Hanes 100% cotton beefy tee. And your mailing address. You can also PayPal us $1.99 each for the Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife Extra episodes, where we discuss one movie in detail. Our most recent one is Josie and the Pussycats, but we've also done Clue, Two for the Road, The Apple, directed by Menachem Golan, RIP, and White Christmas. Dave, you want to tell them what we're doing next?
No.
Not yet?
No.
All right. Well, we haven't. We've decided what our next one's going to be. You're going to be very excited about it, and we will tell you about it at a moment when Dave deems it appropriate. Apparently,
I'll make these decisions.
So, in any case, again, thank you, Blue, for our great theme music, and we will catch you next time. Watch Wizard Wars on Sci-Fi.
Goodbye.
Nanu.